The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Well, 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 we should say good evening to RBN listeners. This is the National Intel Report. E.J. Barton is my name, standing in for John Stafmiller, who's traveling north today. And I have a truly riveting program for you. You won't have to listen to me for 90% of the program, but we're going to do an outstanding piece that Ralph Nader did with a very courageous whistleblower. Will I get his name right? John M. Barnett, who is exposing what has happened in the vandalizing of Boeing. Absolutely shocking. This is breathtaking stuff. It really is. And as a God bless Ralph Nader, he looks well, he sounds well. He's in his 80s now, but he looks like he's 40 years of age. And he is going after Boeing with the relatives who were killed in the Boeing MAX 2 airline crashes. And no better man to do it. He has kicked the living chases out of government and corporations over 20 years on legitimate attacks for their carry-on, but he's be re-energized. And the shocking sad thing is that Ralph Nader lost his granddaughter in one of those Boeing crashes recently, the Boeing MAX crash, and it absolutely destroyed him. But he's pulled himself together, and you'll hear him talk about this in this piece. We probably, hopefully, Mike, will, we might only break it up at one ad break, but I'll get to it now as quick as I can, and later on we'll be doing the Max Kaiser follow-up in the financial vandalizing of Boeing. This is about the technical destruction, and John Stafmiller would have a great interest in this any time, but he was a quality control manager in General Motors for a number of years. But this guy, John M. Burnett, was fired for being the top quality control manager for doing his job. But anyway, Mike has that lined up, and folks, this is something else what you're going to hear tonight. We probably won't have time for calls because the pieces we're playing today take up 80-90% of the program. But anyway, Mike has that ready there, and this is Ralph Nader on his program, and they're running into this interview with John M. Burnett. Okay, well, we'll get to it now in a few seconds.
Well, on the show today, we're going to feature another courageous Joe A. Callaway Award winner. His name is John M. Barnett. Regular listeners to this show know the many different ways we have covered the Boeing MAX 8 story. We've talked about how mergers and management decisions have turned a once great engineering company into more of a financial company intent on jacking up its stock price, not through innovation, but through buying back its own stock. We've talked about how the Federal Aviation Commission dropped the ball and allowed Boeing to essentially regulate itself. And we've talked about how the marketeers at Boeing have continually overruled the engineers. Mr. Barnett was a quality control expert at Boeing, working not on the MAX 8, but on the 787 Dreamliner at their big production facility in South Carolina. There, he blew the whistle on shoddy engineering and a corporate culture where profits trump safety. He's got an eye-opening story to tell, and we look forward to hearing that. As always, we will take a moment after that to find out what's happening in the other dark recesses of the corporate underworld with our corporate crime reporter, Russell Mokyber. And Ralph will also answer some listener questions. But first, let's meet yet another courageous whistleblower. David?
John M. Barnett was a quality control manager at Boeing for 25 years in its Seattle facility. He transferred in 2011 to manage Boeing's new plant in South Carolina to build the 787 Dreamliner, where he revealed shoddy production, as reported on the front page of the April 20th, 2019 New York Times. He retired under pressure in 2017 and assumed the challenge to inform the flying public. His whistleblower complaint to OSHA is now pending. Welcome to the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, John Barnett.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Indeed. Welcome, John Barnett. Describe the plane that you have been very concerned about, the Dreamliner, and how many of them are up in the air? When was the first one launched?
Okay, it's a 787, and the biggest concern came when they opened the Charleston plant. That's when the issues and the shoddy production work really started. And I believe our first delivery out of there was 2012.
And why did they open a plant in North Charleston, South Carolina, where there was a dearth of skilled workers, instead of expanding their facility in Seattle, where I understand the Dreamliner is also produced, in your judgment, is a much higher standard than at South Carolina? What brought them to South Carolina?
Well, I can tell you, Ralph, what the information was shared with us from Boeing was that they were trying to expand the production facilities and bring other areas into the mix. But from an internal standpoint, it was more about the union activity that was up in Washington State, and there were the battles with them and the strikes that they were causing. So they were really wanting to get to a non-unionized right-to-work state.
Did the governor of South Carolina help them do that? Nikki Haley is now on the board of the Boeing Corporation for a few meetings, earning, as other board members are, over $300,000 a year. What was, beside being a non-union state, they give them all kinds of subsidies?
Yes, sir. The information we were provided inside of Boeing as employees were that there were hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies and tax breaks and that type of thing that Boeing was offered to go to South Carolina. And part of that deal was that we hired most of the employees locally. So we were not allowed to go to areas that had high experience in aerospace and airplane building. We had to hire the local people fresh out of college.
And I remember Boeing was saying that they were going to have training facilities, so to upgrade untrained workers to the very demanding tasks of assembling an aircraft. This was really not a manufacturing facility as it was an assembling one. Isn't that right, bringing various parts from around the country and the world?
Yes, sir, that's correct. The 787 is fabricated from various parts of the world, and they all come together, and the final assembly is performed in Charleston and Everett. Yes, sir.
You were a quality control inspector who received high commendations when you worked at the Seattle plant.
Yes, sir.
You volunteered to go to South Carolina. You've once said that the quality control inspectors at Boeing are the last check, the last safety check, before the plane takes off with passengers.
That's so correct. The quality control or quality personnel are the last line of defense. That's correct.
Given the importance of this skill, why is it that Boeing is laying off literally hundreds of quality control people in both their Seattle plant and South Carolina? What's their reason for that?
Well, so they've been preaching for years that quality is non-value added, doesn't bring any value to the product. So they've been trying real hard to eliminate quality. And in the process of eliminating quality, what they're doing internally is they're telling inspectors not to document defects. They're telling quality folks, you know, to do a visual buy-off and not document things and just way outside the realms of how they should be building an airplane.
John, when you use the word quality, I think it's almost a term of art. You don't mean metallurgical quality or something. You're talking about quality control inspectors, aren't you?
Yes, sir, that's correct. So within Boeing, you have what you call the quality department and you have manufacturing. And within the quality department, that's where your inspectors are, your quality managers, your quality assurance investigators. Anything having to do with quality of the product is under the quality organization.
So why would they want to wipe? Why would they want to eliminate that critical role? Because they know if a plane goes down because of Boeing's neglect or negligence, it can be all hell for Boeing to pay. Look what happened after the two MAX crashes in Indonesia and Ethiopia and on other crashes in the past. I mean, how can they dare take a risk like that? Who's going to replace several hundred Boeing quality control inspectors in Seattle and in South Carolina?
So what their plan is, what they call MFPP, it's a multifunction process or production process. And basically what it allows it to do is it's a mechanic to buy off his buddy's work. So mechanics are buying off each other's work, saying that it's good to go.
We're talking with John Barnett, former quality control inspector for the Boeing Corporation on the Boeing 787 Dreamliner. John, aren't they also arguing that automation is better, more reliable than human quality control inspectors? I heard that reported in the press.
Yes, that is correct. However, there's very limited on what can actually be implemented within the aircraft program. We've had several what I'd call false starts with the technology where there's, you know, they're promising that it's bigger, better, and badder than any inspector. Well, they go to implement it, and it isn't. So there's a lot of trial and error, and there's a lot of discussion before they've actually implemented things and proven them out.
Well, your experience, which we'll get to in a moment, the shoddy situation going on in the North Charleston plant in South Carolina, was so detailed that you were a main source for the New York Times Sunday page one expose of what was going on down there with the Dreamliner and the sloppiness, carelessness in the Charleston, North Carolina plant. So yeah. Would you run us through how it all started? I mean, you were one of numerous quality control inspectors, and some of them have followed your courage after you took the first step. But what is it about the other quality control inspectors when they see the same things you see, but they don't protest, they don't write it up?
Well, and that goes back to the inexperience of the workforce. The people that's been hired in Charleston are brand new to Boeing, so they're basically doing what they're told. They're not experienced and knowledgeable enough to know when to push back and when it's not right. They're just doing what's told and following direction. And the management there is just laying pressure on them big time to get the planes out the door, regardless of the condition, just to get them delivered and make the cash register ring.
What fascinated me when I read the New York Times article is the sloppiness on a plane that sells for how much? How much does one Dreamliner sell for?
Well, they're advertised, they're listed for $150 million. They actually sell for about $150
million. $150
million? Yes, sir.
And they're leaving all kinds of junk on the plane after they've finished assembling it. Why don't you describe how you started seeing things you couldn't believe compared to the higher standards you left in the Seattle Dreamliner plant?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Why don't you give us that narrative?
Okay. So just a real quick background. It's been 25 years in Everett, Washington, building, working on 747, 777, 787 when it first started up there. And the culture in Everett and actually Washington State, you know, you got to think back. There's several generations of employees that have been building airplanes. So you have the generational knowledge transfer of how to build airplanes. And the culture up there and the general population understands the criticality of following processes and procedures and making sure the airplane is built correctly, whereas you do not have that in Charleston. They don't understand the ramifications of what a defect could cause because they don't have that experience. And what we found in Charleston, or what I've noticed in Charleston, is there's a lot more pressure on mechanics to just buy off their jobs and get them sold. I mean, they're measured almost by the hour, and they're measured by how many, like we call them beans, you know, a job when they go to complete a job and get inspected by an inspector and bought off. We call that a bean. So they're all about bean counts, you know, how many jobs they can get done in a day, not necessarily if it's done correctly. And the pressure from management is just get the airplanes out. And another part of the Charleston culture that I've noticed is that the leadership here seems to be more interested in self-promotions instead of making sure the product is built correctly. if that makes sense. So it's more focused on themselves and how a decision might affect their career versus how it's going to affect the airplane. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So what did you start to discover?
I think they're really making some poor decisions. And when I first moved down to Charleston, I was the first quality manager hired to set up Charleston plant. And we had developed training plans and from the quality perspective of how to look up procedures, how to follow drawings, how to do your job. And we were pretty much shut down. None of the mechanics went through our training. Very few of our inspectors had to go through it. Manufacturing had set up a training program for their mechanics, and it was mandatory for our inspectors to go through their training. So I sent my inspectors through it, and they came back and said, the only thing they're teaching them is how to roller stamp paperwork. They're not teaching them how to build an airplane. They're not teaching them how to follow processes, just how to close out jobs. So that's kind of where it started, was right when Charleston first opened up. And just over the years, it just got worse and worse as far as bypassing procedures, not documenting defects, not maintaining configuration control of the airplane. And towards the end of my time at Boeing, the issues that I discovered was we had hundreds of defective parts. And what a defective part is something that does not meet engineering or quality requirements and should not be used on an airplane. So we had hundreds upon hundreds of missing non-conforming parts that they didn't know where they went. So I wanted to make sure that we track these parts down, trace them down, figure out where they went. And if they've been installed on airplanes, we need to get them corrected. My management shut me down. They basically what we call pencil whip. So when you have a job that you have to perform at Boeing, it's a work order and it's got steps. And each step has a specific instruction of what you need to do or how you need to install a part in the airplane. Well, rather than mechanics actually installing the parts and inspectors verifying it, they just sit at their desk and roller stamp things. And we find parts all over the place that the paperwork says it's been installed, but the part's sitting over on the shelf.
Good heavens. I can see passengers listening to this and saying, yuck, what is going on here? This is a $150 million plane, and they're engaged in sloppy pencil whipping, as you say. We're talking with John M. Barnett, who is described by the Callaway Award for Civic Courage as, quote, a defiant trustee for airline passenger and crew safety, as veteran quality control manager for the Boeing Corporation on the Boeing 747, 767, 777, and 787 programs. And you have been quoted as saying, quote, I haven't seen a plane out of Charleston yet that I put my name on saying it's safe and airworthy, end quote. Well, have any of these planes crashed due to the sloppiness and the misplaced parts at the Charleston plant?
No, sir, they have not as of yet. But let me throw in a caveat that in production, in aircraft production, and working with Boeing all these years, we have a rule of thumb that it takes 8 to 10 years for a defect to become an issue on an airplane. So, if you look at the 8 to 10 year time frame before a defect becomes an issue, and our first plane was delivered in 2012, we're starting to get into that 8 to 10 year window. So you're correct. We have not lost any 787s to date, and thank God, and I hope that continues. I'm just really concerned that the way they were produced and delivered, that is not going to be the case in the future.
Well, when Boeing's managers and higher-ups saw your write-ups, your documented write-ups on misplaced parts, missing parts, parts in the wrong place, shavings here and there, did they move to correct it? And what are they doing if these planes are already up in the air? Are they thinking about sending bulletins to the airlines? Apart from what they did to you, which we'll get to, what are they doing for that? I mean, who's in charge here? Doesn't all this come down from top management?
Yes, sir, it does. It comes from the top down. But in Charleston, you're right, it's more about profits over safety and quality. And like I say, they're really putting the pressure on the mechanics just to close things out and quality, not document defects. And it's an ongoing thing, and you hear about the titanium slivers that's all in the flight control wires and electronic equipment and that type of thing. That's a major issue. And when I brought it up, I insisted that the airplanes be cleaned, and I told my boss flat out, I refuse to buy off on this airplane as is. I was transferred to a different location. He brought in another way less inexperienced quality manager than myself, and the leadership there decided that they weren't going to take the time to clean the airplanes. They're going to deliver them, and they've delivered. I filed my complaint in January of 2017 with the FAA. Since then, the FAA has gone in and did a spot check, and they inspected five airplanes in Charleston, and they found these metal shavings on all 10 airplanes, both locations. And what they did was they issued a DAI, a designated airworthy inspection requirement, to Boeing. And what that DAI does is within the internal workings of Boeing, it tells them that they have to clean these planes before they can deliver them. But where they came up short, and I don't know if you caught it on the response that they did to the New York Times story, that the FAA came back and said Boeing decided that those slivers weren't a safety of flight issue. And I don't understand how electronic equipment full of slivers, metal titanium slivers, all over the flight control wires, the electronic equipment, the power panels that actually run the full power of the airplane. I don't see how that cannot be a safety of flight issue with metal shavings in there.
Well, tell us how many of these Dreamliners are up and what routes do they usually fly?
So I'm not sure what the count is up to now. I know when I left, we were up over 800 airplanes that had already been delivered. And they typically fly overseas, so they fly over the oceans and, you know, the long routes to other countries.
And how many pilots?
Two, I believe. I believe it takes two to fly the 787.
And were there any counterfeit parts, which are not Boeing's fault? They don't counterfeit parts, but there are reports over the years of counterfeit parts, for example, coming from East Asia, very, very facsimile similar. Were there any counterfeit parts that you discovered?
So actually, I was part of that back before when all this came up. I was actually working receiving inspection at the time when all the counterfeit part issue came up. And we put very specific safety catches in place to make sure that incoming parts were not counterfeit. Again, in Charleston, they've eliminated those. So we don't know for sure if there's counterfeit parts coming in or not, to be honest with you. They've bypassed those safety or those quality checkpoints.
Why weren't there FAA inspectors at the scene? This plant has 7,000 employees in North Charleston, South Carolina.
Right.
I mean, why was it just left up to you and others to make these discoveries? I think people think the FAA is the watchdog here.
Well, and that's another issue that really needs to be addressed, Ralph, because, you know, like I say, I've been working for Boeing for 32 years, and over the years, I've seen the FAA backing off on their oversight, and they've become more of a partnership than an oversight. And the FAA representatives there at Charleston, I actually worked real close with them. They were afraid of Boeing to find too many issues because they would be transferred or kicked out of the Charleston plant. So there was a very intimidation factor from Boeing to the FAA representatives at Charleston. They were afraid to make too many waves.
Like federal poultry and meat inspectors, that's the same problem they've had when they try to be conscientious and do their job for the consumer. I want to ask you, when these charges come out from you, and after you set the standard of speaking out, I understand that there were other whistleblowing safety complaints filed with federal regulators by Boeing workers. Does Boeing ever feel obliged to respond to these publicly?
Well, so Ralph, their response is spun. You know, I mean, they have what they call spin doctors. You know, they'll spin it to, we call it the Boeing switch. So if an employee raises a concern, you know, saying, as an example, if I raised a concern saying that people aren't buying off their job or are not documenting defects, well, then Boeing turns it around and accuses me of not documenting defects. So the person that's complaining, they turn it around and point at them and say they're the ones doing it wrong. So that's a big problem. So, no, they're not willing to have a face-to-face discussion and discuss it. It's just try to cover up, make it go away, and make the whistleblowers look bad, you know?
John, do you ever find engineering professors who don't have to worry about Boeing paying them a salary supporting you? Do you ever find anybody outside Boeing in the engineering and inspection profession taking a stand on your behalf?
Not personally, other than my legal counsel, which is excellent, but not really. I know that after the New York Times came out, I think it was CNN, had some specialists on there, and they supported what I was saying, that, you know, the metal slivers could be catastrophic. And, you know, we haven't gotten into the oxygen systems where the emergency oxygen for passengers in a decompression event, I discovered that 25% of them do not work on the 787s.
Why don't you repeat that? Because people are told all the time when the oxygen drops, you know, put it on you, you know, every time you take a flight.
Put it on, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So what you're saying is a quarter of them didn't work?
That's correct. Yes, sir. A team and myself put together a control sample of over 300 of them. And out of those, 75 of them did not operate as required. They did not release the oxygen. I elevated this to my management. Again, I was removed from the investigation. They turned it over to a 2-year employee within Boeing, and they didn't do anything with it.
What'd they do with the 800 Dreamliners that have these oxygen units?
They have done nothing to correct it. They've done nothing to identify a root cause. They have done nothing to correct the issue, Ralph.
And no airworthiness directive from the FAA and no Boeing warning bulletin to their customers, the airlines?
That's correct, yes.
Now, tell us if you think there's an increasing danger in air safety from over-automation, from automating your type of job all the way to the kind of automation that increase the likelihood that those Boeing Maxes would crash, the so-called software fix that took control of the plane away from the pilots. Some specialist I talked to called it the silent hijacker and pushed the planes down with 340 human beings into the Java Sea and an Ethiopian farm area. Give us your take on this drive for automation, which is, of course, to cut costs and increase Boeing's bottom line, even though, and this was not brought out by the congressional hearing, John, Boeing has spent over $40 billion with a B dollars on stock buybacks to raise its stock, to increase the stock options of the compensation of Boeing's bosses. And as people are getting to know, stock buybacks don't create a single job. They don't build a single product. They're just there to increase the metrics for executive compensation. So here's here's Boeing cutting corners that affect the lives of people in the future in these planes, and they're in effect burning tens of billions of dollars in stock buybacks.
Yes, sir. That's inconceivable to me. I can't wrap my head around it, because Boeing's number one priority should be the safety of the flying public. And the last 6 years that I worked with them, that is the last thing on their mind, is the safety of the flying public, because it's just about kicking airplanes out and making a cash registering.
Well, they claim they've had a great safety record and automation will make it safety plus. Your response?
So going back to my comment earlier, the rule of thumb in aircraft production is it takes 8 to 10 years for a defect to manifest into an issue. So if you look at the last 20 years, that safety record that Boeing is touting right now is built on the past quality of 747, 767, 777s. So the 787 has not been in service long enough to meet the quality level, or to prove that they're at the quality level that the other programs are at. So that's what Boeing is saying, that they're at the highest quality level, or they've had an excellent safety record. But again, we're just now getting into that 8 to 10 year window. So
you're pointing out something that needs elaboration. A lot of people have said that after the McDonnell-Douglas merger,
we'll go to this break and we'll be back in 3 or 4 minutes. Okay, with Ralph Nader and his crystal ball. Okay.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
How would you like to earn an extra $10,000 or more a month from the comfort of your home? We show you how to win with a home-based business opportunity. This could be one of the best financial decisions you ever make. Work from home, full-time or part-time. Plus, you'll never have to talk to anyone. Our professional sales team closes all your sales for you, and you keep 70% of all the sales made. You could be earning money while you're sleeping, shopping, working out, wherever you are, day or night. Our system goes to work for you. You can make a great income without any special computer skills or sales training. Plus, you get paid fast, within just 24 to 48 hours after our professional sales team closes a sale for you. Let us help you eliminate your financial concerns. You could be earning enough money to pay off debt, buy a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. We've got you covered. If you'd like to add an extra $10,000 or more a month to your portfolio, and you would like to know exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, go now to www.getstartedwithus.com. That's www.getstartedwithus.com. Again, that's www.getstartedwithus.com.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Okay, we're coming back in, I think, and we just continue on with this riveting interview with Ralph Nader talking to John N. Burnett, blowing the whistle on the vandalizing of Boeing, and we'll go back to that now. Okay.
A lot of people have said that after the McDonnell Douglas merger with Boeing, where the McDonnell Douglas culture took over Boeing, Boeing moved from a prime engineering high reputation firm to a financial get the stock up, stock option bonus firm, and degraded its engineering priorities. In fact, someone said about the MAX that the Boeing marketeers overruled the Boeing engineers. In your career, did you see that change firsthand?
Yes, sir, I did, unfortunately. It was probably about 6 months or 9 months after the merger between Boeing and McDonnell Douglas, and we, within Boeing on the production floor, had a little, I guess you'd call it a little funny or a little joke that said, you know, Boeing didn't buy McDonnell Douglas. McDonnell Douglas bought Boeing with its own money. And what I saw was when the merger happened, they brought in the McDonnell Douglas leadership to take over the Boeing company, and it was like a light switch. It went from quality to all about shareholder value. It was just amazing. Looking back, it just is so clear that the direction of the company made a 180 turn at that point in time.
Well, how, as we conclude, I want to get Steve and David in on this, but how are you holding up professionally and personally? I mean, they forced you into retirement.
Yes, sir, they did. I'm not going to lie. It's been rough on me. It's been rough on my family. I'm still dealing with issues. I'm still having anxiety attacks, PTSD. But you know, it's been very rough. It's taken a serious mental and emotional toll on me. But, you know, I want to try very hard to keep the focus on the safety of the airplane. You know, I mean, that's what my story is about, is telling my story enough to where the right people get involved to make sure that these airplanes are made correctly. Because the 787 carries 288 passengers plus crew. So the last thing I want to do is wake up in the morning and see a 787 that's gone down because, you know, titanium slivers caught fire at 40,000 feet, or a defective part broke loose because it wasn't built correctly, or, you know, they had a decompression event and people weren't able to get emergency oxygen. I mean, it's just, it keeps me up at night, Ralph. I can't sleep. You know, it's taken a heck of a toll on me.
And for this level of professional concern, you got Boeing's trying to break you, discredit
you, sir.
Defame you, and probably blackball you from any future employment opportunities, should you seek them.
Yes, sir. Actually, that's already happened. I've been blocked. I was blacklisted. I was blocked from two different positions that I'm aware of that I can prove. There was probably others that I can't prove. And that's another thing. You know, when you're dealing with Boeing, you have to have it in documentation, you know, because otherwise it's your word against theirs and they're going to win every time. But I was able to keep my documentation.
You know, I noticed that at the congressional hearings in the past few days, you know, the Boeing CEO, Mullenberger, was a very contrite and humble, and he paid compassionate attention to the families, holding up the pictures of their deceased relatives. But he knew, and the Boeing lobbyists behind him in the chairs knew, that they own the Congress. They give money to over 300 members of Congress. They're saying to Congress, where else is anybody going to go? You know, we're Boeing and Airbus, and you're not going to go after the only domestic manufacturer of big body passenger jets. And it's really sickening to watch, because the questions coming in are tough within a narrow framework. They don't go into the fundamental design, although Congressman Steve Cohen from Tennessee laid out how much Mullenberg was being paid and asked him why he didn't get a pay cut. He was being paid $30 million bucks, even after the crashes, and he didn't ask for a pay cut. And he replied to Congressman Cohen, well, it's up to the board of directors. Well, he's chairman of the board of directors. I calculated in the 3 hours I was sitting there listening to him, he made $45,000.
Wow.
Just in those 3 hours.
Unbelievable.
So we're dealing with corporate emperors who put on a show for the members of Congress, and they're humble, and they always address them as congressmen and congresswomen.
Right.
They know who's in charge. And by trying to break you, they're trying to make you an example to anyone else at the Charleston plant. Well, look what happened to John Barnett. You better shut up. But I'll tell you, if Boeing has to experience one or two more crashes due to Boeing faulty inspection or Boeing negligent design, it's going to break Boeing, because it's no longer just two major companies, Airbus and Boeing, dominating the world. You've got now the Chinese, Brazilian, Japanese about ready to offer competitive large-size passenger planes, number one. And number two, you may not know this, John, but in the 1950s, the British aerospace industry was one of the leaders in the world, and they produced a plane called the Comet Jet, and three of them crashed.
Yes, sir.
And that was the end of the British aerospace industry leadership in the world. And so beware, Boeing, the board of directors of Boeing and the CEO digging in their heels on this Dreamliner mess and the disasters with the MAX have now a career conflict of interest with the future well-being of Boeing and its workers, which is why the families have demanded that there be a mass resignation, as would have happened, by the way, in Japan right away.
They would have bowed. Absolutely.
They would have bowed and resigned. David, Steve, any final comments or questions?
If I could just touch on one thing, about the congressional hearing, and unfortunately I'm in the process of moving, and I was able to get bits and pieces of it. And I guess my put is, you know, I'd love to sit down with the CEO and the decision makers at Boeing and let them take my concerns seriously, and let's have a one-on-one discussion. I don't have a problem talking to any of them.
John, we're demanding that the committees have technical specialists testify after Boeing and not let Boeing get away with its stonewalling.
That's excellent. That's an excellent plan. Yes, sir.
And you will testify, I assume.
Absolutely. But one of the things I've noticed Dennis Mullenberg keeps saying over and over is, you know, safety and quality is top priority. Well, as a quality manager, I have a I don't know if you're familiar with performance management reviews, but it's a yearly review where you sit down with your boss and they review your work over the year and they grade you on how well you did. And based on those reviews, it defines your future raises, your bonuses, your ability to participate in special leadership programs, that type of thing. During my performance review, as a quality manager, I was penalized and basically received no raises. And he actually put this in writing, that I needed to learn to work in the gray areas of the procedures, that I was knowledgeable almost to a fault, that I needed to stop documenting quality issues and defects in email, You know, so I guess my question to Dennis is, you know, you're sitting up here saying that safety and quality is top priority, but yet you have quality managers within your organization that are being penalized for following processes. So how does that make it top priority?
Which is exactly why you should testify before Congress.
I'm willing anytime, Ralph. I mean, like I say, they've done their damage to me. You know, I was forced to retire, you know, and I will deal with what's ahead of me. But it really needs to be brought to light before we start losing the airplanes.
Steve,
and that's
David.
My top concern is the safety of the flying public. As a quality manager, that's what I swore to protect, and that's I'm going to do everything I can to.
And you put your entire career on the line.
Yes, sir, I did. I was put in a position to where I had to choose between the company I love and the job I love and my career versus the safety of the flying public. And I had to sacrifice those to protect the flying public, or at least try to.
Beautifully said. Steve and David?
Well, I certainly don't know how to top that. I'm kind of speechless, sir, at your courage and completely appalled at the arrogance of Boeing. And, boy, it just makes you want to have that whole company just crash.
There's some serious reckoning that needs to happen in there, you know, as far as following procedures and building the airplane correctly. It's for sure something needs to change before it's too late.
Man, you know, Boeing is in trouble with their defense contracts, with NASA contracts. The contractors in NASA and Boeing in the Pentagon are fed up. You know, they've often suspended the contracts, they've berated Boeing. So Boeing has a multifaceted management problem of great serious proportion.
Yes, sir. You're correct. And I'm sure y'all heard about the KC-46 the Air Force refused to take because they were finding so much FUD and debris. You know, that was just recently.
That's right.
Where are the pilots association, the stewardesses and all this?
Well, see, that's the thing is all of this is internal to Boeing. So as an example, the slivers that I found in the 25% failure rate of the emergency oxygen system, Boeing does not notify the customers that that's an issue. So they keep it under wraps internal to Boeing and try to cover it up or, you know, make it go away. So the pilots, the stewardesses, the customers don't know any of that.
Well, we're out of time, John M. Barnett, and congratulations on your Joe A. Callaway Award for Civic Courage. I'm sure you'll get other awards, too. We hope to see you before Congress to react to Boeing's testimony, and full speed ahead for you in the coming months and years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nader, and it's a pleasure talking to you, and I look forward to meeting you very soon.
Certainly.
We have been speaking with John M. Barnett, whistleblower and winner of the Joe A. Callaway Award for Civic Courage. For more about his story, go to Ralph Nader Radio Hour.
Very good. No, that's wrapped up quicker than I thought. That's fine. You've got the gist of that. wow. And the other thing about this is Ralph Nader, as I say, God bless him, he's in great nick, and he is the most experienced attorney in consumer law in America, bar none. And not only did he lose his granddaughter, which truly upset him there last year when that Ethiopian aircraft with the MAX, their Boeing MAX, he is now lined up with the relatives of those to go after Boeing, and no better man to do it. He is absolutely going to lay into them. And he's got all sorts of his going after them will be congressional evidence, and he will be using John M. Barnett, et cetera, never mind Barnett suing Boeing. But Boeing, engineering-wise, is an empty shell. It's an empty shell of a company. There's no doubt about it. Over the top of the hour, we'll play the financial wrecking of Boeing with Max Keiser later on. But dear, it's just truly shocking. Again, these Goldman Sachs management buyout and merger mania era, this is the epicenter of the end of it. It's akin to what Kenneth Lay did to Enron, and also in that entire era, and George Bush, smug lowlife that he is, let that go on. And the American national grid, electric grid, is not a hardened grid. Now, they're talking about coronavirus, which is exaggerated, actually, but it is a creeping device that will wipe out the elderly population. It is a bioweapon. It's not a flu virus. And the amount of morons of doctors I've met a few during the week talking about the flu virus, I said, it's not a flu virus, you misinformed moron. It's a bioweapon. It's a creep one. It's not a violent Black Death one. But when you get it and recover, it was secretly unknown to you. Your immune system has been wrecked. Get it a second time, no matter what age you are, it'll kill you. And this is the thing. And the it's fair to put out there, and I don't mind quoting Deagle, the four natural elements you can take to make yourself bulletproof from coronavirus. And coming back to this Boeing thing in a second here, but I have to raise it as an example of this tyranny we live under. That is, if you take high-powered garlic, vitamin C, colloidal silver, and iodine, those four. No use taking one or two. I heard an RBN broadcaster talking there recently. You take two of them. You take the four of them or don't do it at all, and then you are bulletproof. High-powered garlic, high-powered vitamin C, high-strength, I should say, colloidal silver, and iodine in the right proportion. I don't have it at hand, the right proportion. Those four will make you bulletproof. They were a defense against Ebola as well, by the way. But now this other program thing, I didn't know Ralph Nader has his own program. I've put in a request for him to come on his program. But there again, it's those wretched embedded emails, which I despise. But when I get in my new setup, my lines here are going to be cut down in a few hours. This is my last broadcast here in where I am. Currently, my dear landlord sold out from with a building out from under me, gave me notice to quit on New Year's Day, and I had to scramble to get a new place. I very nearly ended up homeless, but I've got what I want now, cottage out way out west. And I've just been talking a few minutes ago to David Dubine, who will be coming on. Deborah Tavares will be back with me on the 14th on the Barden Report. On the 14th, I'm back on air with fiber optic cable, thankfully. And she has been quite ill, but she's back on that day. And the following week, the 21st, Saturday the 21st, we'll be talking to David Dubine about the Grand Solar Minimum. And I forgot to say in the intro where we are, where I live here in Hereford Powys area, Powys being the county in Wales. We had literally biblical flooding for the third time this year, 2 weeks ago. The worst flooding in 500 years. Hereford was absolutely annihilated by the River Wye flooding its banks. And Britain is recovering from that. And the state of the land here is shocking. It's now, early March. That's the month for planting here. But they won't be able to plant for another month or two. And the winter wheat in Britain is a write-off, a total write-off. There's a very good program. You look to follow it on YouTube. Harry's Farm. He's a wealthy ex-car magazine guy, but he has 400 acres in Oxford. And he has been wiped out as well. But it's just truly, truly shocking. But I said we wouldn't have time to take calls because we're dividing this program up between the runs of things, between ad breaks, etc., etc. I'll do take a quick call, and that's the only one on this first part of the program. Chris in Las Vegas. Okay, hello, Chris. Hello. Hello, hello, hello. Do we have Chris? Hello.
Sorry about that. Am I here now, John?
Or yep, yep.
PJ?
No, PJ. PJ Barden. Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
This reminds me a lot of Bain Capital. And when you're going to destroy a company from within so you can loot, rob, plunder, cheat the people who have worked for years out of their retirements by claiming you went bankrupt because you devised to be so, it seems like a diabolical, unconscionable act that they all should be held, drawn and quartered for to me.
Sure, sure. Yeah, this is commercial vandalism, and the likes of Trump too doesn't know what to do about this. He doesn't understand monopoly, crushing monopolies like Google and Amazon. He just doesn't get it. One of our great companies. Well, buddy, they're destroying you as well as is Amazon and et cetera, et cetera. They're part of the conspiracy against you. But it's that's a shocking personality flaw. Like, he's a narcissistic personality, Trump. But you'll hear me bash him all the time on this network. I just don't get it. And is his Attorney General Barr working at a snail's pace? And probably Hillary Clinton will come back into this screwed up Democratic convention. Who cares? But again, it's just disconnected. If everything's coming at people, not from people, people just still haven't woken up. But anything else?
Well, we don't even know who Attorney General Barr really is. His name is Guillermo Barrios. And so when we have a false persona there, well, we can only have doubts about his legitimacy, because an honest man would be going under his true name, not trying to deceive the people to think he's an American whenever he is a profound Jesuit at the very least. And he has very conflicted biases of the bar that have clouded his mind of reality into the disreality of the legal system, which is, of course, the removal of God from the law. And secondly, I think that the absurd illusion of this bizarre self-policing myth, which is at the very best preposterous, because you're never going to have any true oversight when you have people watching after their own self-interest, because they will find no problems by design. It's like our legal system, like the police. When they self-police, it puts us all in clear and present danger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The amount of police, amount of people shot and murdered by police at traffic stops in Britain, I think in 2018, it was, was 120 or something. But again, where are the militias? I keep asking. Okay, I'm over here in the UK. I've lived in Denver, Colorado. I've lived in Canada. I know it's like to live in America. I liked it very much. Well, that was 1990. That was a different era. A different era. But it's a police state in America, and it is in Britain as well.
Yep. Absolutely, PJ. Myself, I have survived two egregious abuses of mass deadly force over alleged pretextual traffic stops here in Las Vegas. I had a third one by one of the perpetrators of my false arrest, false incarceration last week, trying to harass me, intimidate me from filing a lawsuit against his criminal posterior. He was scared to death, and so he was trying to use his color of law pretext to try to intimidate me from seeking redress of grievances.
Oh, yeah, mine was. My shocking to be come face-to-face with that. But, I regard it as truly dangerous to travel in a vehicle in America, and the danger is not traffic, it's the police. It's the look of the draw. It's like a roll of the dice, isn't it, going out in a vehicle in America. And every other week on my program, The Barden Report, I have pieces I can use again, and John Stafford highlights them all the time on RBN's site, police abuse and attacking the public, and absolute low-life scum. Like, the qualifications to go into the police now are so low, it's as if they're recruiting from the mafia. It's just shocking, truly shocking.
I think you're exactly right. The mafia, the Mossad, the ADL, they seem to be pulling from the ilth of the earth these abject criminals who are psychopaths and putting them in guise of police officers or public servants when they're nothing but private foreign mercenaries.
Oh, yeah, and most of the training of police in America is run by agencies who are owned by the Israelis, right? And like the way the Israelis treat the Palestinians. That's about the height of training in American police. And again, this, as I say, we're surrounded by dozens and dozens of issues. Which one do you lead with? Like, they're now coming up with 9 or 10 mega, mega, major issues to deal with. Like, there's a psychological proof of fact. When any individual is hit with 4 traumas in their life, say loss of job, divorce, financial collapse, and an illness, that's enough to buckle you, unless you're very, very strong and have a very good mind to organize yourself around it. But people are just battered to death, and the toughness of earning a living, enough money to survive. And now we have, I'm doing a program, my own program, with Divine in the 21st, Saturday the 21st, on updating people on the ground solar minimum. And we have lived under it here in Britain. The flooding in Britain now has wiped out the harvest here. There's going to be a food shortage. One of the things in Britain, because of Brexit, most of the companies and drug companies, et cetera, had double stock and treble stock, et cetera. But 90% of the pharmaceuticals come from China, and they're all shut down right now. Look at the satellite map. Dubai has it on the site of the pollution. There's a permanent satellite showing the pollution in China on a color-coded basis. It's now, they've got rid of the pollution, but the factories are shut down, and we've got financial Armageddon. So pick your tyranny. Oh. Yep. Okay.
Thank you so much, PJ, for filling in for John today and letting me chime in. God bless America, and God bless the true people of the world that love their country.
Very good. Thank you. Talk to you again. Okay. Right you are. We're probably going to a break now, and then I'll repeat, as somebody's asked me here, the immune, bulletproof immune system for coronavirus. I'll do it now and I'll do it again. The 4 items are high-powered vitamin, garlic, high-powered vitamin C, colloidal silver, and iodine in right proportions. I haven't got the right proportions, but you could go onto Deagle's site. I know we have a We don't deal with Deagle anymore, but he has this very well put together on a site, etc., etc. And I presume we put it up on RBN soon. But there's 3 other great medical sites. GreenMedInfo.com. I put it number 1 with Mike Adams as the NaturalNews.com and GreenMedInfo. They are stunning sites. You get a university education on every ailment in the world and how to help yourself and take charge of your own health, that being the key thing. But after the break, we'll play a piece, and then we go back to the Max Kaiser thing on Boeing. Wyoming farming taking apart Mike Bloomberg about his ignorance of farming. It's a very, very good piece, a short piece, but we'll play that after the top of the hour. But going back to Boeing, Boeing has been just vandalized. How? Well, he shows you the FAA just are in bed with them as well. And they're producing this crap. These Boeing airliners, there's 900 of the Dreamliners. That was all about the Dreamliner. Forget about the Max or the software one. I'm not forgetting that. That's a scandal in itself, where they employed gamers, to write the software. And hackers, well, there's some hackers very good, at the lowest grade production. And again, that hasn't been properly dealt with at all. And Congress is fielding soft questions to these morons from Boeing. This is criminality on a shocking scale, corporate criminality on a shocking scale. I've been dealing with a lot of that stuff on the edges for years. And I do have form of going after, well, water companies tried to screw me and electric companies, and I've beaten the crap out of them. But I know how to approach it. But I worked in multinationals for years, and I know how to intimidate them. It's not too hard, by the way. So wait till they're launching a new product and then go after them. And I tell you, you bring them to their knees. But I'll do a program on that sometime. But no, the coronavirus is it's a nasty thing, all right. But as Mike Adams rightly said, the thing about the coronavirus is not the spread itself; it's the financial tsunami that'll go ahead of it, and it's causing disruption in Britain already. And this supply chain, etc., etc. Now, okay, Boris Johnson's slow releasing information about it, but again, they're not the truth. There's not being told about it really. It's taking sensible things, and of course we're based on pharmaceutical medicine in the UK, top to bottom. So, and then Trump, God help him, excuse me, he's waiting for a vaccination. That'll be a pile of crap. A genuine vaccination that doesn't have squalene or aluminium or mercury in it that could be used instead of vaccinations. There is a type of vaccination that's relatively safe. Only anybody's body can react badly to any input. But that will take a year. The top professionals will tell you. And they're going to rush out something now, and the pharmaceutical industry will make billions. And there's Trump saying, oh, here, I've given you this. Again, he's a gullible tosser regarding putting that up. But again, no coherent conversation about it on the BBC, which is a pack of lies. News-wise, the BBC is a pack of lies. And the stuff they're pushing us every other day, and they've adopted Greta Thunberg, little Greta, and they're giving her own program. That should be on air soon. But little Greta is there's quite a large thing. Not having prepared for today, where her own parents are abusing her. And I'm not going off subject here. I'm just coming off the top of the hour with some stuff. But her own parents, who are wealthy and are part of theatrical, Greta has had mutism, autism, eating disorders, and mental trauma, because as a young child, she went overboard, scared about the climate. So that's why she was picked to do what she's doing. But anyway, there's all sorts of traumas around us, and it says, how do you prioritize? It's very, very hard. But anyway, we're going to the top of the hour break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner.
manner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.